Hello, everybody. Welcome back to the NDL podcast, the first edition of season 32. We are going to talk a lot about what's happened over the weekend in block one. We'll go back to the draft and recap some things. And Jason, we have a new national champion defending the title this season. So I will ask you first and foremost, as I always do, how are you this evening, sir?
Very well, very excited about what's coming up for me, and this will be my one and only podcast for a while with you. You'll have to find somebody to fill my shoes and do much better than me while I'm gone.
Yeah, by the time you get back, it'll be like block five, so you'll have some catching up to do. I know we were just talking before this that you're gonna disconnect and enjoy Europe, which is awesome. I'm jealous. I got to do that back in the fall. I'm hopeful to do it again in the next couple of years over the summer. But where are you headed?
I am going to Spain for 17 nights, and as it stands right now, going to 5 different soccer matches, with the possibility, once the schedule gets released for the final week and I'm there, of 2 more. So I may have to sell a kidney before this trip's over.
You going to get to a Champions League match at all, or is it mostly just league play?
Unfortunately, no, but I am going to the Copa del Rey final, which is going to be an El Clasico between Barcelona and Real Madrid, which I've already reached out to a company that gets access to tickets, and they said that it's probably going to be about a $500 ticket. So
yeah,
that said, getting a chance to see Mbappe and, you know, guys like that in person, worth it.
Yeah, the rivalry too. I mean, when I was over there, a ticket for Real Madrid versus Atletico in Madrid was like $80-$90, and that was to sit like at the very, very top, very far away. But yeah, soccer is no joke in Spain, England, Germany. Those leagues are kind of next level. So anyways, enjoy it. But let's talk a little NDL here today. Let's start with the champion of this past season. We had a new one in LSU, so congratulations to Bucknut in winning the national championship. Jason, were you surprised to see Jiggy dethroned? I know you've made that comment of, I'm not betting against Jiggy until someone beats him, and now you have someone who beat him. I guess your thoughts on the national championship and crowning a new champion for season 31.
I wouldn't say I was shocked. You know, obviously, as I stated, I was not going to bet against him winning, because he, you know, it had to be one of those situations where someone finally had to beat him. But, you know, it's been those two guys for 2 seasons now. And when you play somebody that often with big stakes, you learn from your mistakes or you repeat them. And Bucknut did a really good job of learning from the mistakes he made the season before. He's also got LSU, which, you know, as good as Oklahoma is in the game, they're not LSU. And he doesn't, Jiggy didn't have the same level of quarterback that he had at Kansas. And I think that played a big role in it. He also plays a style of defense that, you know, some people like, some people don't. But the fact of the matter is, he forces you to take what's there and he limits the ability to get big plays. And he was able to hold Jiggy to just enough bend but don't break to get a couple stops and get the win. You know, this is a situation where we're going into this season, and once again, those are the two guys that for me are top of the league, and I will not be shocked to see them in the title game once again this year.
Yeah, I would agree with you. You know, I've actually picked up a lot of things defensively watching Jiggy, which you would think, well, what are you talking about, RB? You just gave up 41 points. That's a story for another day. But no, I'm with you. You could definitely tell that the gap is closed. And I know Smitty had a shot in that national championship 2 seasons ago to dethrone him, and it came down to a 1-point game. But you can tell this top tier of player in season 32, and you guys have probably heard me talk about the tiers, which I'll get to a little bit later in the show. But this tier one of guys who are consistently making the playoff, they are going 10-2 or 11-1, just high-level players playing against each other, mostly in the SEC. I would say a lot of those guys are in that conference right now. But, yeah, not surprised. There had been a couple close calls. Congrats to Bucknut. I know that was a very good game. And like you said, you know, that quarterback at Oklahoma, I was a little surprised that Jiggy went with Mike Hawkins over Jackson Darnold. Now, I know Darnold got benched in real life and struggled, and not Darnold, Jackson Arnold. Sorry, I said that wrong. But he was very limited in this game. Didn't have the greatest arm, but he really was resourceful with him and played really well. So you got to tip your cap to Oklahoma getting as far as they did and doing what they did last season.
And again, it's not just the regular season, because obviously, you know, the title game is a little bit different. But you look at the Endale Cup. I mean, these guys have battled each other repeatedly over the last couple seasons. And again, you learn your mistakes. And I think the difference is Bucknut has had the same team, and he's been able to really learn the ins and outs of his team. He's been able to really figure out who needs to be where. And like you said, when you change teams and you have a different quarterback and you have a different set of players, that puts you a little bit at a disadvantage when you're going up against that same opponent, in my opinion, because the guys that have, and you've seen this, the guys that have kept their team 2-3 seasons seem to get better and better and better the more they play with those teams. It's just human nature.
Yeah, it's a great segue, because I really wanted to recap and look at the draft. You know, it was it took a while. We did the soft draft. It actually, I think, worked out perfectly, because I still think we finished in the time we were looking to by the end of the day Sunday to get the season started this weekend like we did. So, yeah, talk about guys going to new teams. I think there's some notable ones. I won't steal them all. But you look at Smitty going to Ole Miss, D. Kennedy going to Alabama. And then you got, you know, the top picks, obviously, you know, Petty number two going to UNC. Jason, what was kind of the theme of the draft, or what did you notice that guys were doing in this draft as we get ready for obviously this season, but then looking forward at EA College Football 26?
I think you had a couple guys that were looking to take either their favorite team or teams that are set to be really, really good next season. You know, Dre taking South Carolina at 7th, Sammy taking Florida State at 9th. There are a lot of guys that look to get set up for the next draft, taking kind of higher ranked group of 5 teams. And then I think you had some guys that were in the same boat I was, of trying to take low end teams or lower end teams that can set you up to draft well in the next draft. This is such a unique situation because we've never had a fourth season, and it's been a long time since we've had this end of the year season where everybody's kind of doing different things to set themselves up for the next game. And kudos to Lick for, you know, he gets the number one pick overall, enters the draft, and then takes the same team just to say that they went number one in the draft.
Yep. I was going to say.
But I mean, you look at a guy like Pat, you know, taking North Carolina, I look at that as setting yourself up for next season's draft, because there were a lot of better teams sitting right there. But North Carolina is a team that, if you can overcome their iffy defense and you can put up a bunch of points, which some people have found out already, you can do really well with the win goal. You can do really well with the goals and set yourself up for next season to go out and get a top tier team that we don't necessarily know who those teams are going to be yet, but you also avoid going through the gauntlet of the SEC this season.
Yeah, I'm glad you bring up North Carolina and Pat. Is, you say you're setting yourself up for next season. I mean, number two pick, you know, you kind of already set up there, but I do know what you're saying.
Well, when I say setting yourself up, I'm talking about how good the team's going to be in the next game, because that's going to be the interesting thing. Does North Carolina get a bump? And
the Bill Belichick bump, right?
Exactly. Now he's got an even better team, and he gets to keep them going into that next game. Or he can look at the rosters and, you know, if he has a really good season, I'm drafting top 10. Well, I enter the draft now and I go get one of these really, really good teams.
Yeah, he kind of gets the best of both worlds with that pick. I think he just recently moved to North Carolina, which is one thing. But you think about the win goal, I think it's like 4.5 or 5 maybe. And then you also look at the schedule and you're like, oh, wow, that's a very winnable ACC schedule, right? We talked about it last season with that dude, is that you don't play Clemson. You don't play, you didn't have to play Louisville. You didn't have, and that was obviously MJ Kemp, who was very, very good. He kind of avoids all the big dogs in the ACC. Now, this season, he does have Sammy, which will be a tough one. And then don't sleep on Boston College. Rock and Sammy actually just played yesterday. High level game. He took care of business against Vanderbilt, 52-21. So he kind of gets the best of both worlds there. The one
he
pick
also
that
avoids, he also avoids Virginia Tech, which is very notable. I mean, you don't have to deal with Miami, Virginia Tech. You don't have to deal with Cal, like all the sneaky good teams and the good teams in the ACC completely off that schedule.
Yeah, you look at some draft picks here. You look at the one that surprised me a little bit was South Florida. Joker's getting them, but honestly could be setting himself up for an even better pick next year, taking them in that conference. Again, very winnable conference. And then you feel your heart feels happy for some guys like Holmey, who got NC State back, who had him for a long time. James the Car Man, he's a UCF grad. Him getting them, that's pretty cool. And I'm just kind of scrolling down here. Oh, Nidler getting Penn State at 27. What a steal. What a steal that was.
Yeah, I was very surprised to still see them there. It was the quickest pick in the draft, too. We went straight from Iowa State to Sudden Blues being on the clock. It was like, damn, he picked instantly.
Was a little surprised to see Wilds leave. Texas Tech, I think, is a nice little team, fun team for him, but I was a little surprised to see him leave Iowa. But he did mention that some of the ratings and abilities got pulled from some of his players in an update, so wasn't just quite the same. Scrolling through here, I'm just trying to see if there's any
especially with his running back. With that roster, they have no good wide receivers. You lose the abilities that running back had, and that team is useless offensively.
Yeah, and just scrolling down the list, I think I talked about Rock at Boston College. That's going to be a team to look out for. M. Allen at West Virginia. Some pretty good late picks here. Really, really surprised to see Northwestern go all the way at 90. I know they're not a very fun or good team to play with, but I don't know if we've ever seen a power conference team fall that far in the draft, so that was pretty crazy to see.
I guess the craziest or the most shocking pick for me was pick 46, not taking a team. That just blew my mind.
Yeah, and then you had a whole bunch of other people not take a team. South GA Cracker still sitting at 81 with no team. No, we had obviously a handful of guys pop out here last minute or toward the end, which I kind of had a feeling toward the end of last season that some of these guys were either going to go dark or just didn't really finish last season and may not be back next year. I think we've already got confirmation that like seven of them are planning on coming back for 26. They're just taking a season off, which is fine. You know, just going to have to go to the back of the draft, but sometimes it's not a bad place to start a new version of a game to get back up to where you want to be. So
no, and I saw some people during the draft, you know, say they didn't want to draft, which I went to the Sun Belt, and that was one of my concerns was, are we going to have a bunch of empty teams? But it looks like it's the MAC that is going to suffer this year, because the Sun Belt filled 13 of the 14 teams. It's the MAC where you've got Akron, Buffalo, Eastern Michigan, Northern Illinois, Ohio, all empty. Conference USA has three teams that are still sitting there for an owner. So I think those are going to be the two conferences to get hurt the most by the openings that we've got right now.
Yeah, and shout out to the guys who recruited. I actually just had a good buddy of mine I used to work with back in the Mavs days when I used to work for them, and he did too. Z Nickel, Zach, he's a really cool dude, loves sports, loves like leagues like this, fantasy leagues, all that sort of stuff. He jumped in. I know we had a couple other guys that recruited, and I think we filled like four or five spots, and I think we're only down to like six or seven now, maybe a little more than that. But no, this is great. I mean, the draft, I think a lot of guys like myself included were like very impatient. We're like, come on, we're waiting six hours for someone to pick. Like, what are we doing? But then it ended up creating a lot of chat and camaraderie and just guys busting each other's balls, which was kind of funny as well. So.
At least you didn't do what I did, which was scrimmage multiple hours and practice with a team just to find out that that team didn't actually go into the draft. And you probably could have found out by just simply asking the guy, hey, are you going to keep your team?
I did that. I asked a handful of guys, like I think it was Miami, Ohio and BYU, of like, hey, those were two teams I was very interested in. I knew they weren't going to be available by the time I entered. But yeah, I definitely asked some of those guys and learned my lesson. I kind of always knew I was going back to Wisconsin unless like one or two teams was available, and didn't get either one of them, so I got my team back, which was good. And I think you saw like three or four guys actually draft the same team that they had last season, which was interesting, but you know, why not test the waters and see where it goes. So all right, well, moving along, we'd love to talk about this weekend's matchups. We'll actually start with the top 25 first, Jason. Scrolling through it here, you know, this first poll is always very interesting, but I will say I do think it's very accurate, surprisingly. I know when a poll comes out for the first season, the first time, it's always kind of like, oh, who's ranked there? Why are they ranked? What's going on? But scrolling through it, I don't really have a ton of arguments. I mean, there's maybe one team that I am like, eh, I'm not too sure. They're still a new coach. But I guess what were your reactions to this first top 25 poll?
Yeah, I think it was a mixture of, you know, trying to pinpoint the good coaches who have gone to new teams, but also the really good teams that even though they've got a new coach, they're still a loaded team. And I think one of the ones that was kind of difficult for people to pinpoint was Colorado, because obviously D. Kennedy leaves, but they're still a loaded team. And I still ranked them. I know they ended up not getting ranked in the coaches poll, which kind of surprised me. But it's still an amazing team, especially if you have a competent coach with the weapons that they've got. And then you've obviously have, you know, where do you put the group of five guys, especially good coaches that have gone somewhere. Obviously, Fired Up Chip has shown he can dominate with a good team and he can do really well with Central Michigan. So he's got to be in there. And then USF with Jokers, we talked about him earlier, sneaking in last at the 25th spot. Washington State and Lick, you know, getting that top 20 spot after a really good season last season. In terms of the top five, six, seven, I mean, you could put, I think after LSU and Texas, you could put those guys in any order you wanted. You know, you could make an argument for El Jefe. You could make an argument for DK being third. You could make an argument for, you know, D. Kennedy at Alabama, who, good luck to him if he can break the curse, because it seems like nobody can do really well with Alabama on this year's game. I think it's just a situation there where you're picking who you feel is the best, but there's no wrong answer from, say, third to about seventh or eighth.
Yeah. No, that was one thing that I've been talking about in the chat a little bit. There's kind of this tier 1A that's Bucknut and Jiggy. Then you've got this tier 1B, who, like you said, is like 3 through, I'll call it 10. I think there's probably 10 guys in that next tier. You got Vegas, Marion, D. Kennedy, Smitty, who am I missing? Rain, D. Kane, you know, Shell, like all those guys. Yeah, all those guys I would consider kind of like that first tier of coach. And I've said it in the chat, and you guys are probably like, what the hell is RB talking about, this tier 2 of coach? And I think tier 2 is like 30 to 40 different guys in this league. It's kind of a long, long list. But what I've noticed from some of these results so far, these first few games, is like this tier 2 is really like, it's really evened out. It's really a scratch and claw. So many close games here. You look at Auburn versus SMU, 31-30. You look at Phoney at Indiana, 20 to 17 against Big Z at San Diego State. And then, I mean, to stay on Phoney, he just had an overtime game against Marion. And these tier two coaches, these, you know, 30 guys who are kind of battling, you know, you would not be surprised to see a couple upsets here and there this year. I mean, Phoney almost just pulled one off. He played a hell of a game, defensive battle against Marion. And you may see some of these guys find themselves in a conference championship games, or maybe even in the back end of the playoff, which is really exciting to see so far this season. So if anyone's wondering what I mean by tier two coaches, it's not a knock. Really, it's just kind of I think everyone knows there's that first tier of 10 guys who are better than everybody. And Big Mike is one of them. That's one I just missed there. El Jefe, MJ Kemp, just to name a few others. But you're really seeing this tier two play each other in the non-conference. It's been a lot of fun so far.
Yeah, and I think there's a couple things at play too. And we've had the discussion, you know, of All-American versus Heisman. And it's part of it is the fact that All-American is a prime example of EA doing what's called DDA, which is dynamic difficulty adjustment. It's been a known issue with the FIFA game for a decade. They denied it time after time, and then they let it slip in a earnings report a couple years back that it does exist. And it's basically a thing where if a game is, you know, say in this game versus FIFA, let's say it's a 14-point lead, well, they give a little bit of a boost to the team that's losing. And with All-American difficulty, it's very noticeable. We've all seen how fast momentum switches and how brutal it can be when it goes against you. And that plays a factor in some of these games. You also have the situation where because some of these guys have played each other now. Let's say they don't even scrim. Let's just say in season, some of these guys have now played each other four times because they schedule each other year after year in non-con. You pick up tendencies. You pick up what play somebody likes to run, who they like to go to in a certain situation, even if it's a different team. Well, he's going to go to the slot receiver on third and short, or he's going to, you know, call this play in the red zone. And those little pieces of information can come up huge. And then you've also got the fact of this is a season where people are on teams that they may not necessarily have wanted that fit their play style. But again, we go back to setting up for the draft. You know, I prefer a team personally that is really good defensively and has some offensive weapons. I went with a team that had a bunch of offensive weapons and no defense. And so it's going to be a unique challenge for me. I know there are some guys that have taken teams that don't necessarily fit what they want to do or fit what they've done before, and they're still trying to get used to those teams. And when the skill gap is as narrow as it has been, when you are outside of that top tier of the guys who know this game inside out, they have their playbooks set up exactly how they want. They know every little nuance of this game of how to shade and how to adjust coverages and things like that. That's where you start seeing these closer, more competitive games, because a lot of guys in this league, let's not forget, just want to go out and have fun, and they just want to play this game. And I think that is a big key difference, not to say that there's anything wrong with wanting to go out and win, but I think that's a key difference with a lot of these, like you said, 30, 40 coaches in tier two, that they're not necessarily going to a money play when the game is tight and the game is on the line. So without that, and with guys just having fun, you're going to see a lot more of these close games, these upsets, as some people have called them. And I think it's good for the league. Nobody wants to be a constant whipping boy. Nobody wants to feel like they don't have a chance. And when these games go down to the wire, yeah, it sucks to lose. But at the same time, it's great for the league because people are talking. I mean, where else would we be talking about, you know, like yesterday, people were watching James Madison versus Hawaii. What? Nobody's going to be talking about that in real life. But in this league, close game, people care because it's fun to watch. And that's what makes this league so damn great.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. And it's funny you bring up the DDA, because I was actually chatting with another coach about RNG, which is random number generator. I don't know the validity. I've seen some articles. I've seen some things on it. And basically, when there's one-on-one matchups, there's this potential random number generator that decides, it's like almost like a slot machine. It decides who wins, who loses. And I don't know if that's like true or that actually, you know, one-on-one on the offensive line, defensive line, or if it's in coverage. But I didn't really believe it until I just played Arizona State, and I could feel like 74 overall receivers were making contested catches in traffic against 90 and high 80 overall defensive backs and safeties of mine. And on All-American, I was like, okay, maybe this is a thing. Maybe this is true. And you said it is, Jason, have you heard, you've heard of that as well?
Oh, RNG is, again, this is the same company that's done FIFA for years. It's very well known that EA employs RNG, even in what, you know, you would deem a competitive difficulty for competitions and things like that. It's the same thing with Madden. This is a company that, look, if I'm building a video game, I want people to feel like they have a chance, because otherwise nobody that is below that top tier is going to play. The problem with this game, and it goes to the debate that we've had repeatedly, Heisman is much more realistic. The problem is it's overtuned. All-American is much more of an arcade-ish setup, but it keeps the game manageable for people where they're not just getting blitzkrieg and down 35-0 at halftime. Right. There needs to be a happy medium. And unfortunately, in this version of the game, there's not. Because let's not forget, we tried Heisman at the beginning with scrimmages, and people were throwing 8 picks a game on both sides of the ball.
I do.
And
that's
not fun either. You know, no. Throwing 8 picks and 2 touchdowns and having a 14-13 game, well, that sucks. But having, you know, a 55-54 game where, like you said, a 74 receiver is beating a 90 overall corner and an offensive line that's got, you know, 5, 6, 7 points over the guys rushing against him, and they can't protect the quarterback for more than 3 seconds, that sucks too. Yeah. So we, as a league, we have to weigh, and kudos to the guys making the decisions, they have to weigh what's the best for the league. And what's best for the league is people having a chance to compete and not feeling like, you know, imagine Heisman if you're a team like, you know, like you said earlier, Boston College, and you're going into a Miami and you've got home field advantage, you're pretty much screwed.
Right.
And there's nothing fun about that. At least with All-American, a lot more teams have a chance. But as we've seen repeatedly, the top-tier guys continue to be the top-tier guys. And right. I think that's the difference. Those guys know how to navigate the game. They know how to navigate those RNGs and those dumb little mistakes that the game has. And they're able to rise to the top repeatedly time after time.
Yeah, it's no, it's an interesting thing to follow if it somewhat evens out in next year's game. But I love that you bring up that scrim. I don't remember who it was. It was one of the first days or two that the game was out, maybe one of the first NDL scrims. Someone threw 7 picks and someone threw 8. It was like 15 interceptions in one game on Heisman. It was like, uh-oh. Like,
I think there were more picks than there were points in one of the scrimmages. I can't remember who it was, but I feel like there was a scrimmage that ended like 13-10. And there were 20 picks. It was ridiculous.
Yeah, and it was like, uh-oh, is NDL going to make it in this new version of the game? And fortunately, things have changed and gotten better. Guys have gotten much better. So, no, very, very funny times. Crazy to think, you know, 10 months ago what that was like. But, no, let's talk a little bit about this weekend and results. I'm just kind of scrolling through week one. A lot of really fun games. You know, I'll just kind of read a couple off. Texas 28, Iowa 7. I know that was knotted up at 7-7 at one point, but Jiggy doing Jiggy things. I do think Iowa played a really nice defensive game. Just very limited on offense. Very tough team for Big Red. Now when he gets into Big Ten play, I think that'll change and even out. But another game that kind of turned some eyebrows was Colorado, who we talked about earlier. I was one also surprised to see him ranked, but they have Colorado, you know, 48-14, big win against an SEC team. Boney pulled one out, 20-17. Central Michigan versus South Alabama. King Salty, I think, had a really rough year with Akron last year, but played a heck of a game against Chip and almost had a shot there. So what are some other results or games that stand out either from week one or week two so far, Jason?
I think the one that surprised me the most was Louisiana beating Vanderbilt 49-39. You know, we've seen people do really, really good things. And this was a beefy cup game, but still.
That's right.
People doing really, really good things with Vanderbilt. And Vanderbilt's not doing well so far this season. AU Tigers struggling a little bit with the Commodores. You know, Fresno State getting a win over Washington 21-14. You and I had talked kind of behind the scenes about the Texas Iowa game. Would Big Red be able to do well? And some people were picking him to get 35 pointed. I mean, 28-7 is not a great result, but it's also not a humiliating result.
Right.
Marion's already doing really well with Utah, rolling out of the gates with a dominant win, and then eking one out earlier today. And then Big Mike, he had some struggles last season. A little bit compared to what we've seen from him in the past, but beating Dealer 42-21 kind of shocked me to see that score.
Yeah, it was, man, there were some really entertaining games this weekend, Saturday, and then today as well. One that kind of surprised me, and it's like I can't even really talk because I lost to Pat this morning, but the BYU-North Carolina game, I think a lot of people with Pat going 11-1 last year at ECU, getting North Carolina, having a nice schedule, obviously the ranking to start the season. But the crazy stat was I think Pat had 600-plus yards of offense and BYU only had 200. The reason BYU won that game was I believe they had a touchdown return on a kickoff and 2 pick sixes. This game really wasn't even that close until the fourth quarter. Pat made a run there to have a chance. But BYU was up by 17, 20 points on a handful of occasions. And I didn't realize, I mean, I guess you realize in real life, but I've never played at BYU in this game. And that's a tough place to play. And you could tell that Pat's team, North Carolina, was affected by that one. So a little bit of an upset early off the gate, but I think we've all seen Bruce Bagel at BYU this version of the game. This is his third season now with that team. And he has usually turned it on at the end of the year, maybe starts like 1-3 or 2-4 and then ends up, 6-6 or 7-5. Be a team to keep an eye on in the Big 12 to see if BYU starts off a little hotter this year and then maintains that throughout the season.
And it's not the first time he's beat Pat. I mean, when Pat was at Utah 2 seasons mm-hmm. ago, he beat him 42-31 there. He had a 21-point fourth quarter to come back. You know, this again goes to the familiarity thing that I talked about when you've played a guy more than once in this league, you pick up little tendencies. And, you know, Bruce Bagel is a – BYU is one of those teams that you play with or you play against, and you definitely see that RNG is a real thing, because that team will go hot or cold. And when he's got them playing well, he's very difficult to stop. They've got a sneaky good running back who's got some serious speed, and he utilizes his attack really well to kind of spread you out and open up those running lanes. And if you load up against that, he's going to hit you with the short passing game. So, you know, that's a situation where it doesn't – I could see BYU losing by 20 or winning by 20. It does not surprise me with that team, and he's a really good coach.
Yeah. A couple other games of note here. Florida State, Boston College mentioned a little bit earlier. This game for me was very much of like a benchmark game, and I call it that because – Sammy, heck of a player, heck of a coach, had a really great season last year, was knocking on the doorstep of a playoff on the G5 side. You got Rock, who has been regarded as one of the better players in this league. I think Pat even called him like he thinks he's one of the best players in this league. He just never really had a top-tier team yet. And you watch him play, he's a heck of a player, especially defensively. But Sammy got down 14-0 on two pick sixes, and to have that toughness and that ability to come back, you know, mentally, something I don't have. I wish I did, but got down 14-0 and clawed back and ended up, you know, taking care of business. That was a game to me. The winner of that is, again, a lot of season left, a lot of games, but it was like that start in the ACC can really propel you to compete for the conference or be in the mix there at the end. So that was a good one to see, or a cool game that I got to watch yesterday.
Yeah, the ACC has always – we've talked about it repeatedly over the seasons. The ACC is one of those leagues that you get the right coach with the right team, whether it be because of the players that they have or the schedule that they have, because there's 17 freaking teams in that conference, which is the dumbest thing ever, but that's a whole other discussion. You get the right coach with the right team, and they can make a serious run, not just at the ACC but at the playoff, because it's really dealer – and then whoever is second, it seems like every single season. Dealer's always there, and then there's a different person every year knocking on the door, taking second place, taking third place. El Jefe now with Clemson has kind of changed that a bit, and now Dealer's the one who's kind of having to hang on for second place. So it's going to be interesting to see if there's a changing of the guard this year. But there's a couple really good coaches in that conference.
Yeah, I think I'm looking at the standings right now. This is the most – ranked teams I've seen in this conference ever in this new version of the game. Usually there's only like two, maybe three, but I think I'm counting 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, and I would not be surprised.
And that's without Holmey.
Yeah, and Chase too.
Homie's a good coach. Homie's a really good
VT.
Coach.
Yeah.
Yeah. You look at Holmey's schedule, I think he's one of those guys that can make a serious run because his schedule sets up really well. No offense to people, but the only top guys he plays are Clemson and North Carolina. He's got very winnable games against Georgia Tech, Duke, Stanford, Cal, Syracuse, Wake Forest. So, I mean, he can make a run for that second spot in the ACC if he can get a win over North Carolina.
Yeah, I mean, he almost had Marion beat last year, App State, ODU. That would have probably knocked Marion out of the playoff. So, yeah, he definitely has a role. One team you just mentioned, Stanford, that's someone I'm keeping an eye on. Metro D kind of I wouldn't say disappeared, but, you know, obviously wasn't as active last season. That was a guy who was a top five player two seasons ago, had South Carolina in the playoff. I would consider him on that verge of a tier one player. We just kind of lost track of him last year. I didn't see him a ton, but just scrolling through the conferences, I mean, Big Ten is kind of where it was last year. I think it's shells to lose. I know a lot of people were liking JD and, of course, Daniel at Ohio State. Big 12 will be interesting. I don't know if, you know, aside from Utah, there's kind of that one top-tier player. Steam sitting at Cincinnati could be very interesting. But I'll turn it over to you, Jason, like scrolling through some of these power conferences. And we will still talk G5, but we also now have a new podcast that talks specifically about the G5. But in these conferences, who are some sleepers or who are some people you see could make some noise from the ones we haven't talked about yet?
I think Texas Tech is going to be a really interesting situation. As we talked about Wilds earlier, leaving Iowa. What he was able to do at Iowa with the talent that they've got on that roster, it was a running back and tight ends, and that was about it. And now he's at a team where he's got weapons on the outside. and that's going to change how he plays. And, you know, it's only one game, but his game against Minnesota, he threw for 282 yards, and he only ran for 28 because his quarterback kept getting sacked, it looks like. 8 carries for minus 44 yards. Yikes. But, you know, it was complete opposite of what he's done before. And he threw the ball 34 times. He only gave it to Taj Brooks 18. So that's a completely different style of play from what we saw at Utah. Is he going to be able to utilize that dual dimension offense and make some noise in the conference with Texas Tech? You look at the Southeastern Conference. Ole Miss is one of those teams that is loaded with talent but has seemed to underperform every season. It's another one of those Jekyll and Hyde teams we've talked about. Alabama's the same way. You've got D. Kennedy at Alabama and Smitty at Ole Miss. Are they going to be able to disrupt what we've got pegged as 1-2 with LSU and Texas? And if so, does that make this the most loaded SEC we've seen? And we talk about the SEC ad nauseum, but there's a reason for it. It's got the best teams on this game. It's got some of the best coaches. You know, half the coaches that we would consider in that tier one that you were talking about earlier are in the SEC. So if you've now loaded the conference with that much talent, do we see a situation this year where nobody goes undefeated in the SEC and potentially everybody in the SEC has 2 losses? What would that do to the playoffs picture? That's what I'm most interested in seeing this year.
Yeah, there's going to be some of these quote-unquote tier one coaches that we talked about earlier that are going to miss the playoff, which is going to, I mean, we kind of did last year. Big Mike didn't quite make it and, you know, a couple others. But you look at that dude, obviously was very close last season. MJ Kemp has a great offense. I think it's like a 90 or 91 overall offense with some of the best receivers and quarterback in the game. I mean, you look at 6 feet. He's always sitting there at like 8-4 at the end of the season and playing really well in that conference. D1, you fear, like he had a great season in a small conference. He's looking pretty good in beefy cup games. Sneal at Auburn had the big win at SMU. And I'm pretty sure he played Jiggy down to the wire last year in the Auburn-Oklahoma matchup. I want to say it was like a 7 or maybe a 10-point game. It was a really close matchup. This probably is the most stacked we've ever seen a conference. And, of course, it's going to be the SEC. That's just how it is in this game. All these teams are very good. But I do think you're going to see, you know, you'll probably see 4, maybe 5. I think you could make an argument at the end of the season that there's 5 teams here that are going to make it. But they're all going to play each other. And, you know, unless someone really takes care of business and goes undefeated, you could see a Georgia miss the playoff. You could see an Ole Miss and Smitty or an Alabama miss the playoff just because the talent is so crazy good, and that you just never know with home field advantage and momentum how this could all shake out. So,
yeah, I'm very interested to see how the SEC plays out this season. I think it's by far, and again, I know people get SEC fatigue, but I think by far this year's SEC is going to be the most loaded, the most unpredictable that we've had yet. And I think it's going to easily be the most entertaining conference race that we've had in the 4 seasons of NDL coming back.
Yeah, I agree. And one conference I want to make a quick note on that I thought was hilarious, the Mountain West. Someone mentioned it that I think every single coach in this, almost every single coach in this conference is a longtime veteran, except for Grayson Hewlett, who was at Nevada. But someone said that this was like the retirement home conference, which was, well, I don't remember who said it, but it was absolutely hilarious in the chat. It's going to be a fun conference. I've always talked about the Mountain West being one of the fun conferences I like to follow just because of like the teams, and they play those West Coast games and they're at night in real life. Obviously it doesn't matter in the NDL, but you look at Big Z, Buckeye, Dak, Beer Cop, Jeff Daddy. I mean, Wobble is newer, but he's basically a vet. Bear Ass. Like, this is a really fun conference, and like, I might just pop into that conference chat on the Discord to see all the shenanigans and all the stuff going on in there, because this is a fun one to keep an eye on.
And it's not just that it's all veterans. You've got multiple guys who've had their team for all 4 seasons.
Yeah.
You know, Black Rain has been at UNLV since we came back. IROC has been at Boise State, I think, all 4 seasons now. I can't remember if he was there the first season. Big Z's on his 3rd season at San Diego State. Like, my first season, I had Fresno, And I had a blast. You know, the conference games were always fun. There wasn't a single game. I don't think I docked a single point all season on anybody's coaching report. It was fun. The only reason I left was because the running back got injured three plays into the game and their safeties were like 85 speed. Otherwise, I'd have stayed. I might have stayed the whole time. It's a fun conference to play in, and I kind of miss some of those games because – I think one of the big things about the Mountain West is outside of playing Boise State, there's not really a home field advantage issue with any of those teams. So you don't have any of the weird squiggly lines. It's just go out and play football. And it's so much fun. Nobody's got a superhuman team. Again, outside of Boise State having Ginty, which that first season he wasn't what he has been the last couple of seasons. Every team has a weakness, and it's just a lot of go out, play your game. You know, you're going to have dumb mistakes. You're going to have big plays, but nobody in that group is going all out to try to win and just abusing money plays or feeding the ball to one guy all game. It is literally, if you want to see how the NDL is supposed to be, go watch Mountain West games.
Yeah, no, I'm excited to watch it. It was one of those conferences too, in the media survey that I conducted. I think it had like seven different votes. Like there were seven different teams who got votes to win that conference or something crazy like that. Because, you know, I think a lot of people think Big Z, you know, he's been great there. He's had them for a few seasons, but I would not be surprised to see like a Wobbles who just beat Washington or a Beer Cop who's been really competitive the last two seasons and knocking at the door to catch fire. And then obviously, you know, IROC, he's been in that conference championship game a handful of times. So that'll be fun to keep an eye on. And like I said, you might just see me popping up in the chat just to read and eat some popcorn while watching those guys talk, which would be funny. So not a ton else that I thought about covering today. I wanted to keep this a little bit shorter. I know we used to go an hour, but with all the new NDL media content, I think 40 to 50 minutes is probably the sweet spot unless we have someone on for an interview. But that's actually something I did want to mention, is really excited about the media this season. Jason, I know you'll be away for, you know, 3 or 4 weeks with out of the country. But if you're listening to this, guys, you're stuck with us this long, it's a lot of awesome shows. We've already had a couple of them posted this past week. You got the Outliers podcast with Vic and Sammy, who are talking all about the G5. So you guys can never complain again about not getting the G5 love, because now we have a full podcast for it. So Jason and I can talk about the SEC all the time. No, I'm just kidding. We have,
it's fun with me.
Yeah, I know we have Big Red and is it Andy doing a show? I think the joke was that's going to be called NDL After Dark because of all the F-bombs that fly around. I don't know if we've posted that one yet. I didn't get a chance to listen back to it. We have Game Day, of course, back and better than ever with the crew that's on there. And then we are probably gonna have a couple more shows here and there. Guys are really stepping up and doing some fun stuff to keep the league engaged. We talked about having kind of like an NDL Sports Center every Tuesday and Thursday night where a couple guys jump on and just talk about the games and recap them to catch everyone up to speed. Because I think that's one thing we're missing sometimes, is that we see the scores and we don't really know the story behind the scores. Like I'll just raise my hand. I mean, I lost by 7 to Shell last year, but he was beating me by 14 to 21 the whole game. I was just fortunate to make it look pretty in a 7-point game. But I think this could add a cool element to the league where you're actually going to hear the story behind how the results came about. I mean, a couple of games today, you guys might look at the score and see like, oh, wow, 42-41, 28-27. And like, you get to hear the story of how that was a failed 2-point conversion at the end of the game or in overtime for both of those games to end it. So really excited about that on the media side. Jason, before we wrap up, anything that you want to add or talk about?
No, I mean, I think it just goes to show what this league is, that we went from, you know, a day where the most we got was running a capture card on our computer to pull highlights from PlayStation 2 and PlayStation 3 so that we could make a YouTube video. And that was the height of engagement for this league, because everything was message board. We had the website, but that was about it. You relied on reading recaps. And now we're talking about not one, not two, but 4, 5, 6 different podcasts, shows, et cetera, that just raise the level of engagement. And, you know, we've got guys in the NDL that are just here to play a game, and that's perfectly fine. This league is here for you. We've got guys who want to know every single thing about every single game and almost want to do analytics. That's fine too. We've got plenty of content for you. This league is so damn awesome because of the people. It has nothing to do, for me at least, with this game. This game, in my opinion, sucks because it's EA and they don't put out anything that's actually really good, but it's college football and we've been craving it for ages. And so we put up with it. This league, this community is why I'm here. It's not because of this game. I don't enjoy playing this game. That's part of the reason why I drafted who I drafted this year, was to just not have to worry about anything. I'm going to get 80 points by getting my coaches reports and my participation, and that gets me a day one draft pick next season. Great. Super. That's all I cared about. I'm here because of how awesome this community is, how many cool dudes we have. We've got a group of guys that are going to Texas in 2 weeks to get together for a weekend. Like, think about that.
Yeah.
A lot of us are in our 30s, 40s. We got some people in their 50s. This league has blown up from what it used to be, which, you know, I don't know about you, but when we were on hiatus, I told people about this. Like, I told people that I have contacts with in the media that are big college football guys. Like, I got to tell you about this league where we had 120 dudes. That, you know, we did all this insane shit. And now you look at what we've done as a community and taken it to an entirely unforeseen, unthought of level. You know, while this game was on hiatus, none of us could have expected that the league would come back, would do as well as it has, and have this level of engagement. You get out of this league whatever you want. And we've got guys who are willing to put so much into it. And that's what makes it awesome. And to all of you, I say thank you. Whether you do a show, whether you just comment in the Discord, whether you lurk in the Discord, thank you for making this community what it is, because it is fucking awesome.
Yeah, I was going to jump in and say something after that, but I think we just got to end it on that. That was an awesome way to end the show. Like Jason said, thank you guys for listening. Thank you for interacting, engaging. There's a wide range. You know, you could, like Jason said, come in and play our games, or you could be all in and in all these live streams and live chats and podcasts. Thank you guys for being awesome and sticking to it, man. This should be a fun season. And before we know it, we'll be looking at a new game or some trailers coming out very soon. So a lot of exciting stuff, guys. We appreciate you joining the show today. Jason, enjoy your trip to Europe. Be safe, have fun, and long live the NDL.